Hi, everyone. You're listening to the RevOps podcast or some other name because we haven't come up with it yet. And I'm coming at you from my makeshift podcast studio in my tiny Brooklyn apartment. I've got a really lovely guest with me today. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about how I know him. I think I'm hitting on 10 years of knowing Steven. We met years ago when we both worked at Blue Wolf, which was a big kind of Salesforce partner in the, like one of the first that came up. He then went on to do a stint at HubSpot. He started off as a product specialist, then went into CS operations. He'll correct me if I get anything of this wrong. Then he left to do more CIOps at Grovo. Then came to Go Nimbly, where I got to have Steven with me for a little bit over a year to build out our sales ops consulting function. And then he boomeranged back to HubSpot, where he has been over the past like more than 5 years managing a CS team. Steven, you're also funny and you're kind. You ran for city council in Boston. You have an awesome husband who is slightly cooler than you, but don't let him know. You also have time for two dogs, which is insane because I can't even take care of my plants. And recently took a sabbatical and road tripped across the US. So I say all this to say Steven is an interesting guy. We're going to learn a ton. He knows SaaS. He knows CS. He knows sales ops. He also apparently knows government. So we'll see if we get into that. So Steven, thanks for being here. I'm happy that you're my friend and I'm happy you gave me the time to chat CS ops.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to get to share a little bit. Always to catch up with you. It's always a great time to get to see your face. And just happy to talk and share. I'm coming to you from the wild, rural Western Pennsylvania where I grew up, spending some time with some family there. So I promise my Boston decor for those that are watching is slightly different if you ever get to see me in the future.
Love it. Are you near Lake Erie, like that kind of area?
Like halfway between Erie and Pittsburgh, yeah.
Cool. I've been to Lake Erie a little bit. This sounds very fancy, but it wasn't. I was living in Spain at the time and our au pair was from Erie and I've gone there. It's really, really beautiful. So I'm glad that you're getting some time there.
It's pretty. There's a lot to this country and this world. So we'll go with that.
there's a lot to unpack about Pennsylvania, but that's for a different podcast. Steven, did I get anything wrong? Or anything that you want to kind of highlight?
I think we've known each other for more than 10 years because on the boomerang story, I know that I'm coming up on my 11th year in the HubSpot universe. So it's more than 10.
Okay, cool.
And then we also, my husband would hurt me if I did not say, we also have a cat.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Fat cat.
My goodness. Yeah.
So there's more pets. We have all the time in the world for pets.
Can I just say that I actually remembered a cat and I went on your Instagram and I was like, am I making up the cat? Because I love cats. I was like, am I projecting that Steven is a cat? And you do not have a single picture of your cat on your Instagram.
No, it's a long story. Again, perhaps another podcast, but the cat actually came in the condo that we moved into about 5 years ago. So she's
funny.
She's the longest tenant in our house.
Okay. But not photogenic.
Very photogenic. I just, you know, with so many pets and then sometimes I got to show that, you know, I have a husband and I love him. So all that jazz.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not on brand for you. You're a dog guy. Lovely. Okay. So you and I have talked about this, but on this podcast, we try to go a little bit beyond who you are and your career story, not because it's not super interesting and relevant, but because we want to get to the deep stuff, to the how, so that operators can really get work done and get inspired and know how to do it. So you're one of the people that I know that has the most depth, not only in how to run a CS operation, but you're also extremely technical now, obviously in HubSpot, but also in the Salesforce ecosystem, in sales operations. So I think that you have a really solid approach to, you know, what does it mean to sell a CS team? What does it mean to operationalize a CS team? So before we go into all those questions, can you give me a little bit of a rundown of the size of the team, how it's structured at HubSpot, and maybe how you've seen it change?
When I started back at HubSpot a little under 6 years ago, I moved into CS ops, which was fun and interesting. And I got to see the team grow. At the time, it was really focused on that kind of traditional one-to-one CSM motion. Like every customer has a CSM, usually in a ratio of like, call it 1 to 200, more or less, depending on, you know, business size and spend. And then we had some customers at the time who we mostly did based off of age who went to our scale team. And the rationale behind that was they've been with us for a couple of years. They know what they're doing. They've got a hand on it. Yeah. They're good to go. And when they need help, they'll raise their hand and they'll come to us. And at that point, the team was probably globally under 100, definitely under 200. And then over the past 6 years, I moved into managing within that team. I'm a manager on one of our scale teams. So our customers who have a pool of dedicated CSMs. So I still have access to a CSM, but they have my team, not just a specific individual. And that team globally is about 70. And then the rest of the CS org is I'm not sure the specific number, but it's in the hundreds.
And scale team, as a reminder, are companies who have been with you for X amount of time, do they have to be a certain size?
So that's a good call out. We actually, in the past 5 years, we scrapped the age thing because we, I think the mantras we were going made sense. And then we got to a point where two things really changed with HubSpot. One was that we started to change ourselves. And so we added new products, we up-leveled our products. Mm-hmm. And so even if you'd been with us for 3 years, the HubSpot you bought is not the HubSpot you've got. Sure. And so you needed a CSM to be like, hey, have you looked at these cool new features that, by the way, don't cost you anything extra? We've just added them. And so we realized that didn't work. And so the way we split out now is based off of spend. And so it differs across the globe, but customers under a specific amount go with our scale team. So again, they can email us, they can set up meetings, they can meet as frequently as a one-to-one CSM. It's just that you might not get me or one of my teammates every time. And that is kind of how we look at that split there, is based off of spend. And then company size, it's really just spend. And company size, we have different teams. We have an SMB team, a mid-market team, and a corporate team. And the idea there is that those folks are just more aligned to how does a business with less than 25 people operate? How does a business with 25 to 250 people operate? It's really just saying, like, there are key differences, and the CSM managing that book kind of knows, okay, like, you're not a jack of all trades. You do have a marketing manager and a sales director, and it allows them to operate just with a little bit more understanding of, you know, how that business runs.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. When you're looking at spend, interestingly enough, I mean, if I remember correctly, HubSpot's by like number of marketable contacts, right? So there's also feature spend, right? Like if you use CRM and certain features, I'm sure that there's an upsell there. Does that tend to give you a type of customer? Like, I'm trying to think, like, is there a big B2C angle? Cause that's a huge spend. Or what makes a customer spend lots of money and have a huge marketable contact? Like, what industries actually make HubSpot a lot of money?
So in the past, it was people who just had a lot of contact. Cause we created the marketable contact in the past 3 years. Before it was, if you have a
contact. That's nice of you.
Cause people with a big database were spending a lot of money and saying, I want to prospect to them, but I'm not marketing to them. And so we changed that to say, if you're reaching out to them, that's when they cost you money. So like B2Cs, they're going to make some money on our marketing suite of tools. But, you know, B2Bs who are, you know, casting a wide net, who are reaching out to everyone at a company. So it's really, there's no specific mix. The folks who truly end up spending a lot is, yes, folks with a huge marketable database, but folks who buy into that kind of all on HubSpot. So they've got Marketing Hub, but they've got Sales Hub, their sales team is running on there. Their service team is running on there. They bought Operations Hub, they're integrating, and their website's hosted with CMS. Like, our biggest is folks who are big companies who do have a lot of contacts, but who have a lot of employees, because we have seat-based model on sales and service.
Sure.
And then folks who, you know, have a lot of integrations, who are doing a lot with their tools. There's a mix where, because presently, you know, we've got a suite of hubs with different pricing scales and models, different companies can look to pay us different amounts and based on those levers. So there's no good answer to that, because it can be anyone.
Yeah. Very interesting. So if I recap to go into my next set of questions, you've got CSM's teams like split by not only the size of customer, but how much spend they have. You have multiple products with different pricing motions. You have actually a huge opportunity for expansion plays, like a big land and expand motion. You've got a free CRM tool. So you've got like a PLG motion. You've got, you know, marketing as the core, probably your oldest customers. And the most customers are sitting in that kind of marketing hub space with a huge opportunity for CRM and service. So talk to me a little bit about your expectations for CSM. Like, they're owning adoption. Like, you're telling that, like, I'm stuck. I want you to use more features. I'm being your advisor. How much of a sales hat do your CSMs put on? What's their role in renewals and expansions?
So I would say the role, their sales hat is to do, the sales hat is to do what's in the best interest of the customer. So I guess to take a step back, the way that they're comped right now is we have this metric called revenue retention. And it is really how much money was your book of business paying you at the beginning of the month? and how much is it paying you now? And so their goal, you know, the more customers that stick around, the healthier that that customer base ends up being. And then the more that can give them over time.
I don't know why I just had balloons show up on my screen. But yeah, I'm excited about that. I think I thumbsed up. So good job.
So they're incentivized to just make sure their customers are as healthy as possible. And then if someone does grow, they get the benefit of that. And that helps them hit that revenue retention target. Mm-hmm. And
is that NRR or GRR?
It is.
Like it includes expansions?
It does.
Yeah. Okay. So you're looking at a net revenue retention. I started with $1 million. I ended with 1.1. It doesn't matter if they had an expansion or if you had churn within that.
Exactly. It is. Okay. And so there is that motion of, if you know someone's churning out, you're going to look somewhere else to make up a portion of that.
Sure.
But you know, with the amount of customers they have and with all the growth that you mentioned, the different potentials to move up product tiers, because we've got different product tiers, we've got different product lines. There's a lot of opportunity for growth. So their role is just look at their book of business and see who needs what's next and just identify that. And then our sales team after point of sale remains involved as an install-based growth team. And so the CSM isn't responsible for closing the deal. They're responsible for identifying the need and really quantifying that and then passing it off to sales and working in tandem to close that. But it allows them to really truly say, I think you need this, not I want you to have this, if that makes sense.
Right. And so I've got an NRR target. I start with a book of business. I need to maintain or expand it. Is there a comp on the actual revenue of expansion for CSMs at all? So if I find a customer, it ends up being, I don't know, $50,000 more. Do I get any sort of percentage of that?
You do in a way. Our CSMs presently, they're salaried. So it is, they're not on...
Variable comp.
Yeah. And so they get that. So, you know, regardless if they hit their target, obviously if you miss your target for too long, different conversation, but they're going to continue to make their salary. But if they overperform on their target, then they're eligible for spiff on top of that. And so it acts more or less as a bonus. So not necessarily on any basic deal that comes through, but if in any given quarter, your performance is over what it was meant to be, you're eligible for kickers on top of that. So not directly, but very, very clearly indirectly.
So expansions, you're basically identifying, finding the right AE. Do you call them AEs or AMs? Like who's my sales counterpart?
Usually account executive, but I think their title technically is inbound growth specialist or growth specialist. And it's kind of because it's differently defined based on if they're selling to you out the gate or coming back in, it kind of switches around. But for the most part, we'll just kind of say sales rep or growth specialist.
Let's call them sales reps. Yeah, fair enough. All right. So they identify an opportunity. They
pull their
Sarah and they say, Sarah, hey, they're ready. They want to expand into CRM and they're sort of doing like a smooth handoff there. What about for renewals? Are they owning the whole thing or are they still looping in sales?
So we have a different team for renewals too.
Okay,
and this is new in the past couple of years. We have a contract management team. And their goal is that they're coming up for renewals. They're about 90 days out and they're making sure that the customer definitely tends to renew. That shouldn't be a surprise at most of our ratios. Right. Like that conversation should be a quick like thumbs up or thumbs down. And then the contract manager, if it's thumbs up, you know, the job is pretty much just to make sure that, you know, if they have an auto renewing contract, to make sure that everything's going smoothly. Some customers negotiate. And so we have to get them a new contract out. And then others come and say, I want to stick around, but. And so the contract managers to figure out what's on the other side of that butt. Is it keeping a discount the same? Is it maybe adding a little bit? Is it shedding some contacts, changing a hub around? And so the contract manager is there to do that, working with the CSM to say, hey, like, this is what they're thinking. Is that going to be good for them? Because then the CSM can come and say like, hey, like, I know you want to get rid of your CMS hub. Your website is hosted with us. So that's fine. What's your plan though for the day after you renew? Because I just want to make sure you know your site's going to go down if you don't have it. And there's some crucial things there. So they really work in tandem, but it allows the CSM's role to truly be like consultative advocate internally and like working for their benefit because someone else is taking care of what can sometimes be considered the more difficult conversations.
Mm-hmm. So the CSMs are not quoting, they're not creating renewal paperwork or contracts or chasing signature at all.
Exactly. Yep.
That is sort of the cleanest, right? Like us as consultants have always known you don't want to be the one negotiating rates. You want to be the one on their side, just being like, hey, I'm advocating for you because it keeps that like super clean.
Yeah. It helps them out. You know, I don't like to think of sales or contract management as like bad cop, but in that clearest analogy, like it allows the good cop get bad cop to play out. Like CSM is they're advocating yeah. for you. And the other side is truly in a lot of cases out of their hands. Like the contract negotiation, sure. contract management has their own set of metrics that are slightly different from the CSM. And so they're going to push for what's in the best interest of the customer, but also for their team and HubSpot as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. Let's focus a little bit on that expansion motion. So if I'm talking to a customer and, you know, there's the easiest version of this, which is I talk to them and they're like, hey, we're unhappy with Salesforce, or Salesforce is really expensive and we want to talk about possibly moving to, you know, HubSpot CRM. That's sort of one of the easiest. Someone just tells me they want to buy more. Awesome. I'm going to go liaise on that. What are other ways? Like, does your team look at specific usage or like, I don't know, G2 intent data or anything to tell us that somebody's interested in an expansion?
Yeah. So our product team, to their credit, has a lot of data available to us. And so there's a lot of indicators out there that someone is a good fit for expansion. And it depends on, you know, where you're looking. Like some folks, they'll start to hit the features of a specific tier that they're on. And that kind of indicates mm-hmm. to you, okay, like they're using all their pro tools, like they're maxing it out. Let's at least have the conversation to see, like, are they ready to bump up to the enterprise threshold and get a little bit more, maybe it's just a little bit more capacity, maybe it's specific features. And then you'll notice just another one. Sometimes it's the size of the company, or you'll see a specific integration that they're plugged into. And you notice that like customers who have this integration, usually like that integration solves for one vertical and mm-hmm. not necessarily like as a poach motion, but as like a complementary motion. Like if you have like, if you're integrated to a form tool, but you're not using our marketing automation, like, well, what are you doing with all that input you're getting? How are you pushing that forward? So there's a lot of different indicators that they use to say, you know, I can look at this data in 1,000 different ways, but if they're, you know, hitting the tops of those thresholds, if they're a specific size where you're like, okay, they're, you know, this 1,000 person company, why are they just on the starter suite of these tools? Like
sure.
what, and you go into the conversation and say like, hey, like, what are you using these for? And what are your plans for the future? So there's a lot of different ways a CSM can look at it to identify, which, you know, allows them to, like I said, not have to really go in and heavy sell anywhere, but there's always someone mm-hmm. that is bumping up against a limit or you know, a problem that they can't solve with what they have that, you know, opens up that conversation.
How do you come up with those scenarios? Is this like a smart data science team is looking at correlation of features and plans? Is it more intuitive? Like I know customers who do X typically do Y.
It's presently mostly intuitive. We have in the past some like intent indicators. Mm-hmm. They don't always keep up with us. Like sometimes the product's just growing faster than our intent measures can. We do a really good job of it with risk. We've rolled out some really good machine learning models around risk to say like,
cool.
this customer looks like someone else who then went on to cancel. You should get in front of that now. We haven't moved on to that opportunistic side yet. So it really is mm-hmm. a little bit more of like, I give credit to the CSMs and to our sales reps, like the gut intent there, yeah. but it's something that we're looking at and we're perfecting on one side, and I'm sure we'll kind of copy paste over to that intent side in the next months or year here.
Yeah. Are you using any third party intent to identify, hey, they're on G2 comparing Salesforce and HubSpot?
If we are, not that my team's getting a handle on.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. My guess is Salesforce is probably looking at that more than HubSpot. Like Salesforce has to be scared that HubSpot's coming up market and taking on more of their customer base. I mean, they're fine. They're going to be fine. But
it's been nice for us to be able to be a competitor in that space. Because I think for anyone that's followed the HubSpot story for the past 3, 5, 10 years, you know, for a yeah. while, there was always a natural time when you had to leave HubSpot to go to Salesforce. That was
totally,
that was what it was. And so it's been nice to, you know, they're still a tour de force, like they're still winning competitive
sure.
deals, but to at least have a chance, like it is nice yeah. to be able to say, actually, we can do some of that and
right.
like do it really, really well. And for a lot of companies. And so that's been a really good feeling, knowing that like that product maturity gives our CSMs that ability to not just have to like throw their hands up in the air and know this one right. is automatically lost.
Yeah. I mean, you're definitely capturing a larger percentage of folks who can stay on HubSpot for longer or forever.
Yeah.
I know there's been a lot of customization, but HubSpot runs on HubSpot and y'all are pretty big. So you've got an example there.
It is nice to be able to, you know, see what other folks are seeing and be able to say like, oh no, like I get it.
Yeah. Okay, the other, you know, question I've got on, you know, you have the vision of your CSM as, hey, I'm an advisor. I'm here to do what's best for the customer, increase, you know, usage, et cetera. One, I want to understand, how do you make sure that your CSMs are all, I mean, they have to be really technical and they have to really understand the product. I'm curious about that. And then kind of on the other angle, are there specific features that you all focus on because you know it makes them sticky? Like, are there, you know, specific things that you're like, don't worry about learning that, or like, here's the top five things that your customers are going to care about?
Yeah, I think on the technical side, our CSMs definitely are that. With big pause, huge shout out to our technical support team. They allow us to not need to be that technical, because when something goes wrong, every customer has access, every paid customer has access to our support team. They can reach out and say, hey, this is not doing what I would expect it to. Can you help me out? And that team figures it out. They are amazing. Yeah. But the CSMs, as far as like knowing what each thing does, knowing what the intent of it is, which is becoming increasingly difficult, their skills are insane. You know, I'm constantly amazed by how they keep it all in and know exactly what they're saying to who they're saying it to. So they have to have that because they need to know exactly what's going on there. But, you know, it is in complement with support, but it allows them to continue to be that advisor, to help them devise that strategy, because they know even if they can't do every small intricate bit of every tool, they know the general intent and can say, build your strategy in this tool. When you have questions about what should I be doing next, come to me. When you have questions about, I don't know what this is doing, go to support. Mm-hmm. And but it allows them to really take that strategic aspect.
Do you have like friction there? Like, HubSpot has such an incredible community of power users that my guess is some of your customers know the tool better than your CSMs. Are those customers easier or harder? Like, or maybe they don't exist.
Better. I'm sure there's people out there that know HubSpot better than the CSMs. I think with the amount of customers that our CSMs interact with, they've got, you know, breadth versus depth.
Sure.
But I don't think that they're more difficult. They might be more difficult for support because they're coming with more complex issues. For us, you know, they're really asking like, where should I go next? What should I do? Or to those users' credit, they're not coming to us at all because they're like, I've got this. Okay. Like, I'll check in with you once a quarter, make sure that like, you know, I'm still good. I am rolling along here. Here's my big targets for the year. I've got this. And so I think that's kind of how we think about that. They don't really pose that big of a challenge. And then to your initial question, which I just now remembered, the second part of was, you know, are there features the CSM look towards? Absolutely. But for the most part, it's going to be those features that there is a 1-2 punch there, where the features that the CSMs tend to know best are the ones that also keep folks sticky on the tier that they're on.
Sure.
So complex, deep workflows is embedded in all of our professional products. One, it's one of our longest standing tools. It's one of the most powerful tools. It is also one of the biggest value adds to professional. That's why you have simple workflows in our less expensive tools and you get more. And it's because it is more powerful. It does more for you. It takes workload off of you. So our CSMs know that tool well, because if you're not using it, that is one of the biggest value adds to definitely to marketing pro and to sales pro. And so if you're not there when that renewal comes, your boss is gonna ask, you know, how much value did it add, and that biggest area is missing.
Right.
So like, they know that well, because if you're not using that, that's a red flag that everything else might be also at risk as well.
Yeah. Well, you've got the big ROI question there that makes it easy. If it's, oh yeah, I set up this really incredible workflow to automate our entire webinar series. It used to take me 5 hours a week and now it's taking me half an hour. Like that alone, you could do some like easy multiplication and your boss is going to be like, great, I get 20 extra hours of you a month.
Yeah.
You know, that's worth $2,000 a month, easy. So, you know, and re-implementing, obviously with any sort of marketing automation or CRM tool, the cost of migrating somewhere else, if you like go sticky enough and you're like actually leveraging it, is so high. I mean, we do that work, right? And it's hard to do it for less than 30K.
Yeah.
And so you're spending some real money just moving over. So I think that, yeah, as long as you actually implement some of those features, it's hard to move off.
Yeah.
So it's a great sticky product. Okay. One other question. I am going to go back in time a little bit because I meant to ask this. When you're handing off an expansion opportunity that you've identified, how is your team doing that? And how are you making sure that it's not annoying for the customer, that they're not repeating themselves, that, you know, the AE or sales rep that we're calling them has all the information that they need?
Yeah. So we have an SQL form internally, and it allows someone to just kind of highlight that so that there's a report for the CSM and the AE both to see, like, did I see it? Did it get worked? How'd it go? But then a lot of times, like a rep, a CSM rather, will file that SQL, and then they'll Slack the rep directly and just say, hey, I talked to Joe today, and you know, they mentioned that they're running this issue. I think this is the best fit for them. Let them know. And then one of two things will happen based off of how deep that conversation was. The CSM will sometimes send an email that says, hey, customer, here's Joe. They're here to talk to you about the potential, you know, benefits here, what this is going to look like for you. Or, you know, the AE might reach out and say, hey, I talked to your CSM, reaching out. Or they'll set up a call together and they'll both be on it, especially if it's one where like mm-hmm. the customer knows the need, but we need to both talk about the strategy of the upgrade as well as some of the sure. finer points on the details. But there's a lot of collaboration there. We do our best to keep our CSM and sales team semi-aligned. So you're not working with any rep across the globe. You've got a team of like, you know, one or two teams of CSMs to four or five sales rep teams. So like you start to get names, you build relationships. And right. so it's not just, hey, someone I'm talking about this guy. It's like, hey, yeah. friend, like we know each other, we trust each other, and we can run with this. So it's both relationship, but it's also there to, you know, make sure that just like you said, for the customer, it feels smooth and like we're talking because we are.
And when you say form, is this a like a HubSpot form that you've got that creates a deal? Like what does this form do?
It creates something in the form of a ticket. And then the rep would, you know, take a look at it, and sometimes they'll look at it and go like, actually, I talked to someone else from their company a couple of weeks ago and I know it's not good. They'll just mark it as worked. Other times they'll say like, yep, reaching out, and then they'll create the deal off of that. But it creates, you know, in the easiest terms out there, like a ticket that the rep can then mark as worked mm-hmm. or not. And then we kind of link back to see what was the outcome of that ticket. Did it result in a deal? Did that deal close? Yeah.
And why not create a deal automatically?
The main reason is that as we've continued to grow, we allow other teams to submit SQL. So like our support reps can submit an SQL. Like they're talking to someone, this person is like, I need onboarding. And they say that phrase. So mm-hmm. the support rep might file an SQL for onboarding products and like re-onboarding. Or they might say like, yeah, like I just feels like my sales team is spinning their wheels because they're not able to, like they're wasting time. They're like, oh, you need Sales Pro, and they'll submit it. So like, yeah. it's just that sometimes it's not always the person who has the vested interest. It's someone who's just hearing things and filing them as it's sure. grown. So it's a little bit just because there can be more than one and we don't want to pollute the deals.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. And on the support side, submitting deals, do you have like, I don't know, specific superstars that are doing it a ton and do really well? Like, I'm just curious how you create that adoption, because if I'm, you know, I'm dealing with tickets all day, that's an extra form I have to fill out. I actually think it's like a pretty big barrier. How do you create that culture?
You comp them. We spiff them. Yeah. We added to our CSMs had it for a while, but the support team didn't. And we saw that adoption go up a lot mm-hmm. with support. It was, they had to submit, I think one a month was their goal. And across the support team, that ended up being a lot. And then we said, hey, like you're going to get, yeah. you'll get a cut of this deal. If it's recurring revenue, you'll get a cut of this. And they were like, oh, and then submissions went up. And that's the superstars are the ones yeah. who had that, not the sales motion, but that fearlessness of saying, I hear the problems of what you're saying and I can give you a workaround. It's going to take you hours.
Yeah.
Or you can buy this product and someone else will talk to you. And they just were fearless about saying like, I have two options for you. One is time and one yeah. is money, your choice. And then they give the sales rep the option to jump out there. And they were, you know, just okay with positioning that. Those are the folks who like, they're rock stars and you know, they get a cut of it.
You know, offhand, like conversion of those SQL forms, like by team or anything?
I know in the CS world, we shoot for between like 30 and 50%. Close rate in support. I'm not sure. I'm not sure, but our team is like, you know, we don't want to just throw too many over. We want to keep that strong relationship. We don't want sales chasing yep. down loose ends that aren't ever going to close. It's probably less in support, but even still the teams right. are really good about not just sending everyone to sales.
Sure. I'll take 30 to 50% close rate on expansion opportunities. That's not bad at all.
No.
Amazing. Okay. I have a retro question for you. You've been at HubSpot for a long time. You saw it scale. I'm sure you've made some mistakes along the way. Like if you could start all over, are there certain things that you wish you would have done differently the first time or, you know, mistakes that you made that you would just redo? So if you could go back in time
yeah.
and reset up your team a certain way or a workflow a certain way, like what's one thing that you had a big learn on that you might be able to pass on to others?
Yeah, there's like three quick things I would say that I think are beneficial. The first is set up for self-service wherever you can. Because especially in a growing company or even in a grown company, the predisposition is to always going to be to try to solve with people. And that's going to not strengthen your processes. That's going to hide the problems. And so when you have that gut instinct to say, I need to hire more, you do that. Like, don't not hire, but stop and think and go, if I were to invest a little in automation or in self-service documentation or invest in like an AI for chat, like if I could help people mm-hmm. solve their problems first, could I grow by less? Not because I don't want to grow, but what I found is the more people can help themselves, the happier they are. And when they can rely on you for those next level things. So like, I think we too frequently, especially, you know, over the past 10 years, it's no secret, money was cheap. We would choose growth. And that was the easy choice. And I think sometimes make that harder choice. The second would be look for when you're setting up teams metrics, look for two things. One is how can you tie different teams metrics together? So how can you make sure that your sales team's metrics are more closely aligned with your CS team's metrics or more closely aligned with marketing's, with products? How can you thread that needle? They don't have to be the same, but if they're not layered on each other, you're going to start to go in different directions where folks have different motivations, not anything that's, you know, personal, but that just happens over time. So try to tie those together from the start. And then on that thread, look for ways that the metrics could be taken advantage of. So one quick example of this is that HubSpot in the past, we used to have a different metric called, we called it customer dollar retention. And it essentially measured how much of your install base was still a paying customer at the end of the month, regardless of how much they were paying. And so in the way I phrase that, you can probably see the issue right away is that it prioritized the downgrade to save motion, not because anyone was trying to game the metrics or like take advantage of it, but when you're given the option of hitting your metrics or not, the path to hit your metrics becomes less clear. So you have to think like in an economic downturn scenario, how could your metrics be taken advantage of and then protect against that? So we move to revenue retention to say it's your entire install base, and that creates other pressure points, but it allows us to focus to make sure that the root of what you're focusing on is like the success of the customers as they exist and not other motions. And I think those, we eventually fixed that, but for a while we're like, man, every once in a while our downgrade motion gets really bad. And you look around and you go, oh, it's because if I could cancel you or downgrade you, I'm incentivized to downgrade you. And it puts your interests slightly at odds with the customers and the businesses. And it creates that push and pull there. So I'd say those are the things that like from the jump could have helped us move forward faster.
Yeah. So there's a big trend that I'm seeing everywhere, kind of like 2024 is the year of NRR, right? Which is a lot of what you're talking about is, you know, around creating one metric that makes sense. So instead of revenue growth, we're now looking at NRR more holistically. And then you mentioned when you were talking about it that there's some tension that, you know, different kind of tension that you have now. What are the things, like, what are the complexities of having an NRR number?
I think one is that, especially in our org, CSM doesn't fully own that upsell motion. And so, you know, if sales hits their target and potentially pulls back on selling to save it for another month, that could impact you. And again, like, it's not that anyone would do that, you know, with any negative intentions, but it's something that just kind of naturally happens as you look at like, I want to keep my job. I think that's one area. The other area is that, you know, in an economic downturn, you know, your existing customer base becomes a little bit more riskier. And so it is, it's good because we have to think about it like that, but it's bad because it makes those targets harder to hit when everyone is holding their money a little bit closer because, you know, we're teetering on the brink of a recession or in it or not going to. It depends on which side of the, you know, economists you listen to. But there's a lot of like competing interests, and just that move to NRR makes you a lot more susceptible to external factors and put some things out of your control, which can cause some struggles there.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Are you seeing kind of as a trend of 2024, kind of staying on that topic, but are you seeing that more of your customers are coming to you being like, hey, I just need to save 10%. Can you help me do that?
Maybe not save 10%, but not spend 10% more. And that's part of that move with NRR is like, if one customer says I need to cut 10%, someone else who might've said, I'm going to upgrade 10 or 20%. You can't make that up because capital is more expensive right now. So everyone is like making you work harder for it. And then some folks just don't have it anymore. That's been, I think that the trend of this year, you know, for us, it's been, you know, we want to focus on usage. We want to make sure folks are getting the value out of their tools. And that's where like, we're going to make a concerted effort in looking in that area. But from the outside in, you know, folks are looking for efficient use of those dollars, making sure that Not that their ROI was fluffy, but they can say with no uncertainty, this software has saved me money. And if they can't say that, they might not want to cancel, but their boss might. And that's the issue. And then, you know, when we're pitching that growth, you have to come clear mission, like clear value prop. It's intentional. Folks aren't, you know, they're not willing to take a gamble as much as they were, you know, a year, two, three, 4 years ago.
Yeah. It was sometimes easy to sell and say, hey, it's the best price now. You're going to need it anyway. And I was like, oh yeah, okay. That makes sense. Not the case anymore. So to recap, I think 2024 year of NRR is definitely something that I'm seeing everywhere. You know, thinking about your CSMs, knowing how to make the ROI calculation and help your customers know, hey, I did get return on this investment, or I saved a lot of money. It helped me do XYZ, having that really tight. And then, you know, I think that the focus also on adoption and usage and making sure to shepherd and be the advocate for your customer in this motion. I think those are three things that we're going to see a lot of.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
Cool. Last little question for you, just because I think it's relevant for everyone. Is your team using AI in their CS motion? Is there something interesting that you're all playing with or even an idea that you have?
We're starting to kick around and get better with it and like look into ways we can use it. But I think the clearest one we found is not, at least for us, not necessarily replacing the motions of the CSM, at least not yet. I think it's still junior for that. But let's say that you're a CSM and there's a support rep that had a thread that was like, you know, 80 messages long, and then it went to sales. You can use AI to say what happened here. And it'll tell you like, this distilled it. Or you're a sales rep and you're like, okay, they had, you know, a back and forth conversation. Maybe they talked on the phone. What did they talk about that I can read in 15 seconds? And that's where we're starting to get there. And then we're starting to play around with like, give me a draft of what I would tell a customer who's asking X. And like, we have HubGPT. So HubSpot has, so you can ask our chat, our HubGPT, like HubChat, questions that are HubSpot related, and it will give you some kickbacks to it. So you can start to say like, what would I tell a customer who wants to build this? And like, it'll give you something where it's still spitting out, but like it saves you some writing, which is nice. But the bigger thing I think is in inefficiency is where it's like, okay, I don't want to read that email chain. Like tell me everything. Or like, even like for folks who have, let's say you're looking at a big company and you're selling into it and you're like, tell me the last time that someone spoke to them about X. And it can just like go through all the conversation logs and say, it was this date. Because there's marketing emails, there's support conversations, there's CSM conversations. But I would say like, when was the last time someone talked to them about marketing professional? And like, to tell me like, it was July of 2017. I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah. So I think time saving and things that aren't, that are tactical, but our time sucks.
Yeah. And we have like all this data from Gong, et cetera, that I forget what it is, but like 70% of our go-to-market team's time is not spent selling or with the customer. And so anything that we can do where somebody's not researching for hours to try to figure out those answers, I think that's amazing. Yeah. I'll give a little plug. I know that HubSpot's, you know, building this. One of our customers is Superhuman. So email kind of a automation tool. And they have that feature, which I use a lot, where if you have a giant thread, you can be like, what happened in this thread? And it gives you like just a paragraph explaining this decision. This person said this, this is the next step. And that's been really amazing. Yeah. So I totally see that. And everybody should, I mean, we're all going to have that in the next few months. Yeah. So it's amazing. All right, Steven, thank you for hanging out with me. I'd like to see you in person soon. I'm making a public announcement that you will come see me in 2024. Enjoy your family, enjoy the holidays, give your cat a big hug, and thank you for being here.
Thanks so much. Always a great time. And we'll do it. Brooklyn 2024.
Love it. You're the best. Okay. Bye. See ya.